Hi, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Sharon Houston talks about an apartment she had in New York that was haunted.
Then I would come home and my coffee pot would be on, the water would be running in the kitchen, and my bathroom light would be on. And I was like, okay, this is weird. But where was I going? I was paying $467.32 to live in a studio apartment in Manhattan in the 90s. Like, that was unheard of. Blood could have been coming out of the faucets, and I would have been like, well, I'm just gonna have to deal with it because this rent is real good and I can go to see Broadway shows. You know what I mean?
Okay, so then what happened?
And all of a sudden I hear this squeak, 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 pop, light turns on. Beelined it to my super's apartment and knocked on the door. And I said, did that girl die in my apartment?
Oh, shit. Today on Storyworthy, comedian Sharon Houston tells a timely story about a haunting in Hell's Kitchen. Stick around.
Hi, this is Sharon Houston, and I'd love for you to pick up my album, Sharan Sharan, on iTunes. Listen to it on Spotify. Listen to it everywhere. And you're listening to Storyworthy. Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I'm so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. And I gotta tell you right off the top, if you've been listening to Storyworthy for over 7 years, which, as you know, is a long time, then you might remember the very first episode I did, which aired July 10th, 2010. And that episode was with my guest today, Sharon Houston. Can you believe it? Do you remember her story about her finding her dad in Miami? Do you remember that? No? Well, what kind of fan are you? Listen, Sharon Houston is here today, and I'm so thrilled because she has got a story that is especially timely for this Halloween season. And the title of today's story is A Hell's Kitchen Haunting. A Hell's Kitchen Haunting. So I know it's a place, and that place is Hell's Kitchen. And I know there was a haunting, so I can't wait to hear what Sharon has to say. She always brings it. She's so busy here in Los Angeles. She always has things going on. Right now, she has a brand new comedy CD out there called Sharan Sharan. Get it? Duran Duran. You remember that band? Sharan Sharan. Stay with me, people. Anyway, that's available over at her website, iamsharonhouston.com, and also on iTunes. So Sharon brings the topic, a haunting in Hell's Kitchen. And so I started thinking about, you know, hauntings in my own life. And guess what, you guys? I don't have that in my quiver. I have some haunting-like things that happened. Now, my sister, she's had a couple of hauntings, but here's the thing with my sister. They've happened in two of her houses. So I say to myself, is it the houses or is it my sister? Do you know what I mean? Because I do believe some people are like conduits to, you know, another space and time, for sure. I have a girlfriend, Debbie, who is a, not mediator, but a, what's the word? Sharon? Not a mediator, but like if you... They're called, it's not a psychic, it's intuitive.
An intuitive, no, but she can kind of like, she'll be like, you know, okay, somebody's here with me now. He's an older man and he's, you know, bouncing a basketball.
That's like a psychic and an intuitive. It's not a mediator.
No, but...
A medium, you mean.
Medium, that's it. Right. Mediators, if you get divorced,
right.
You get a mediator.
You can get a mediator if you don't want to go to court, yeah.
But a medium, that's what I'm saying. So some people just kind of have that in them, and I think that's my sister. But me, personally, the only thing, a haunting kind of a thing that I distinctly remember in my life is when I was 13 years old, with my other little 13-year-old girlfriends and levitating one another. And that shit went down. I mean, there is no doubt about it. Light as a feather, stiff as a board, and then Karen Giuliano is 5 inches off the ground. And that happened. I mean, I know it did. So we used to do this in her basement. And another thing that happened was at one point, like, we would put each other into trances, right? Like, we would be in a trance. And this little girl, my friend, she started clawing the cement floor of the basement, right? So she pulls the rug away and she's clawing with her fingertips to her, all 10 fingers are bleeding. Now, you would not do that if her eyes are rolled back in her head And Karen Giuliano is on the ground clawing the basement floor. So crazy that we had to run upstairs and get her mother, Mrs. Giuliano, to come down and help us. And she had to like shake her out of it and slapping her. What'd you girls do? What did you do to her? And it was crazy. And then Karen falls into a heap of crying and we all had to go home. The sleepover was over.
That's so crazy.
I mean, I'm telling you, that happened. So I know there's like a convergence of menstrual cycles or young girls, you know, people seriously that have kind of a more open thing that might be going on, people in transition, people that are, you maybe have lost a loved one recently or maybe moving could probably stir it. So there's different things. I think there's different times in our lives when we are open and closer to this other world.
Right. But I don't, yeah.
Do you think so?
No. I think we all are. You're either in tune with it or you're not.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you think it's always there.
I think we're all intuitive. I think it's always there. We just don't, if you're not aware of it and you're not tuned into it, then you're not going to know. Like I can walk into a room and tell if someone's there.
Wow. Is there anybody else here in this apartment right now?
No, there's no one here.
Oh, thank God.
But I'm not like a psychic or a medium. I just have that thing where it's like, quick example. So I was doing a show at Barney's Beanery in Pasadena, and no one was there yet. The restaurant was empty. There was like one bartender. I couldn't see anyone, and I couldn't find the bathroom. So I was like, here, there's a sign to a bathroom in the basement. I go down to the basement, and I go into the bathroom, and I just stood there, and I looked around, and I was like, I'm not alone. Went to the bathroom, went to wash my hands, and then another faucet just kept turned on. And I was like, it's fine, but I could feel this presence, and I washed my hands. And I walked around because, you know, I do that thing that white people do in movies. I walked around to investigate because I'm like, where is this presence coming from? And it kept drawing me back to the bathroom. So then I just went upstairs. And then my friend Melissa McQueen hosts a show there. And I saw Melissa. I'm like, hey, is this place haunted? And she goes, oh, my God, did you go down to the basement?
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. It's haunted as shit. Like, if you ask everyone who works there, they all have a ghost story.
How long has Barney's Beanery been there?
Well, it's not about Barney's. It's about the building used to be a tenement house.
I see.
It used to be an apartment that, like, housed lots of people. And then it was, like, a Woolworths for a long time or some kind of drugstore. And then it became Barney's. So that building's been there for a very, very long time.
I see.
But they don't know what the they said one lady who claimed to be a medium was down in the basement. And she stood in front of a mirror. And she freaked out and was like, get me the fuck out of this building. That mirror is a portal. And I don't even know what that means.
Wow.
But so they got rid of the mirror.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of other famous places here in Hollywood that are haunted, like the Roosevelt Hotel.
Well, I know that's definitely haunted because a friend of mine stayed there when they were renovating, and he was like, oh, we had some experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. Paramount Studios, they say that, I think it's the ghost of Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, really?
The Star Trek creator. Yeah. He haunts a couple of those stages. I think it's Star Trek Row. I'm not positive, but
that's hilarious.
Because I used to be a page over at Paramount, so I remember this history we used to say. Well, I should have looked that up. But there are a lot of places here in Hollywood. And
the Comedy Store.
The Comedy Store, of course.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I interviewed Pauly Shore one time, and I asked him, so, you know, tell me about some of the hauntings that you have experienced or stories you've heard about, you know, here in the Comedy Store. And he looks at me with a dead straight face, and he says, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, what? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. Who says that? I'm like, everybody.
Everyone.
Yeah, I have totally felt stuff up in the green room, in that hallway, in the background
everybody
by the office.
Oh, yeah, everybody says they feel something in the green room. I've never felt anything there, but I mean, it's always so much energy. There's so much going on that I just don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a moment alone where I go, oh, someone's here.
But you don't think it's the Comedy Store. You think it's the previous owner. Again, that was...
Well, the mafia killings and
the
stuff.
The mafia killings that was at the hotel. What was the name of the restaurant before? Not Caesar's.
Cicero's.
Not Cicero's. Wait, Caesar's?
I thought it was called Cicero's.
It was...
But then there was that comic who jumped off the top of the Hyatt.
Yeah.
So some people say he haunts it. Who fucking knows?
I know. Ciro's.
Ciro's.
So it was Ciro's. Ciros.
Yeah.
And they say there was mafia guys and perhaps some killings or something going on there.
Yeah.
Okay, but this story today is about Hell's Kitchen, and that's a neighborhood in New York, right?
Yes.
All right, cool. I'm looking forward to hearing it. All right, you guys, before we get to Sharon's story, I did want to remind you to head over to the website, storyworthypodcast.com, and, you know, join the mailing list. How about that? That'd be great. And don't forget to subscribe to Storyworthy on Apple Podcasts, NPR, Stitcher, wherever you guys listen to your shows. Okay, you guys, Sharon Houston is a comedian and an actress and a producer and a writer. And you may have seen her on Chelsea Lately, Comedy Central, VH1. And you also may have heard her podcast, Daytime Justice, which I really thought was a super funny show about daytime court TV. And one of my favorite things that, Sharon, that you do right now is Bob and Donna. I can't get enough.
Oh, my God. I want everyone to watch Bob and Donna. It's my favorite thing, and it hasn't gone viral, and we don't know why.
It is so funny, you guys. It's over on YouTube. You just go to YouTube, and you just type in Bob and Donna in the search, and it's Sharon and her friend.
Randy Eisenberg.
Randy Eisenberg, right, because he posts them all. I see his name.
Yeah.
And it's just this couple from Michigan. And they just go around, they go to New York, they go to Los Angeles, and they see the sights, but it's all from their Midwestern point of view.
And their hatred for each other, which they're constantly complaining, they're constantly, it's so funny.
It's so funny in a lot of ways, and really.
And you can also watch it on Instagram, short versions, and oh, you go nice. To @Bob_and_Donna on Instagram. They're 1 minute episodes, and they're hilarious because they're the highlights.
Well,
and
on YouTube, it's so nice because they'll just play. You just start with the
you
first
just,
one.
You start with the first one, and automatically goes to the next long. Episode. Yeah.
Super funny. And like I mentioned earlier, right now, Sharon Houston has a brand new comedy CD out called Sharan Sharan, which again, you can find over on iTunes. Get a digital copy there, or you can go to iamsharonhouston.com and get yourself a physical CD. You can also follow her over on Twitter @Sharon_Houston. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Sharon Houston.
Yay.
Yay.
So when I packed up all my things and was moving to New York as a young girl, everybody was trying to scare me, you know, into not doing it. They were like, oh, you're going to get mugged. You're going to get raped. Somebody's going to beat you up on the subway. Well, my problem was not with the living when I lived in New York City. It was with the dead. So a friend of mine told me about an apartment available, a studio apartment available in Hell's Kitchen. My friend Dorsey, she's like, call this guy, apartment, $900 a month. I'm like, great. I show up to the building and I buzz on the buzzer that reads super. And this guy comes down the stairwell and he's got this crazy, he's just unkempt, crazy afro, dirty wife beater on, Dickies. He's got a chain, you know, a chain of keys around his waist belt. And I wave at him through the glass. And I'm like, hi, I'm Sharon. I'm here for the apartment. And then he got closer to the glass and he gave me a weird look, opened the door and says, hi, I'm Chris. Really nice to meet you. Like, he was the nicest guy. Looked horrifying, so nice. And so he goes, he starts to bring me up to the second floor and he said, the apartment you're here to see is no longer available, but I have another one that just opened up and it's apartment number 2. It's on the second floor. So I was like, great, not on a fifth, it's a 5-floor walk up. I get to go to floor 2, perfect. He opens the door and it's this huge studio with tall ceilings and it's like an East Village studio in the heart of Hell's Kitchen. And it has a full bathroom, big kitchen, huge closet, and it's filled with someone else's stuff. So I'm looking around, and the super Chris goes, well, you know, this is the apartment. The girl who doesn't live here anymore, her stuff is still here. You'll have to get rid of it. You'll have to repaint it if you want it repainted, but I'll buy the paint. I'll install new floors for you if you want them. And I looked at him and I was like, what happened? And he goes, oh, the girl who lived here was 27 and she was a photographer and she died. And I was like, oh God. And I gave him this look and he goes, oh no, no, don't worry. She didn't die in here. She died somewhere out there and like gestured to the windows outside. So I was like, oh, okay. So as he's rattling on and on about the apartment, he's like, well, you know, the apartment's $432.67 a month, all utilities included. I immediately forgot about the person who died there, and I was like, I'll take it. Sign me up. I didn't miss a beat. So literally 2 days later, I'm getting rid of things, and I'm moving into an apartment in Hell's Kitchen. So everything's fine. I paint it. I literally didn't sleep for 3 days. I'm painting it. I'm doing everything. And then weird things started to happen. Like I would come home from work and my kitchen light would be on and my living room light would be on and my TV would be on. And I am flaky. I am the type of person who will, you know, be overworked and not have enough sleep and leave things on and go, oh, I didn't realize I did that. So then I would come home and my coffee pot would be on, the water would be running in the kitchen, and my bathroom light would be on. And I was like, okay, this is weird. Then one day I came home and I opened my front door to my apartment and everything was on. And my cat's tails were straight up in the air, their eyes were wide, and their whiskers were out. And so I literally opened the door, looked around, shut the door, you know, beelined it to my super's apartment and knocked on the door. Chris's wife answered the door, and she had her baby in her hip, who looked just like Chris, but tiny. Mm. So cute. And so she's at the door, and I go, so Jarrett, was Chris fixing something in my apartment today? And she goes, no, why? And I said, did that girl die in my apartment? And she goes, hold on, let me put the baby down, I'll be right over, and slams the door in my face. So I walk down to my front door. She comes out, and she goes, open the door, let's go, we're doing this. I'm like, what's happening? Opens the door and she starts praying on everything. She literally turns into like a Pentecostal preacher. And she's like, Lord Jesus, get this spirit out of here. Lord Jesus, please clear out the energy. Lord Jesus, in the name of Jesus, let this spirit free. Like she prayed on my closet, on the kitchen sink, on my dining room table, on my futon, the window frame, like everything. And then she looks at me and she goes, well, my work is done here. I think it's good. And then she leaves. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I literally like smoked pot every night to fall asleep at night because I was terrified. But where was I going? I was paying $467.32 to live in a studio apartment in Manhattan in the 90s. Like, that was unheard of. I blood could have been coming out of the faucets. And I would have been like, well, I'm just going to have to deal with it because this rent is real good and I can go to see Broadway shows. You know what I mean? I lived a good life in New York because my rent was so low. So everything's fine. It was actually quiet. It actually worked. Like apparently ghosts, you know, believe in Jesus and they listen to those kinds of things. Literally, I had no paranormal activity until 3 years later when I was packing up to move to LA. And that's when things started getting weird again, where I would come home and the water would be on and a light would be on and, you know, all these kind of things. And, you know, I would have picture frames would float up and then slap down on the wall. They would just kind of like almost like they were clapping. And I would make excuses for it. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's because it's an old building or, you know, some weird wind must be making that thing deliberately slam into the wall and stuff like that. Well, my ghost did not like being minimized. So one night, my ghost did something that would make me address her. Like, I would have no choice. So I was going to bed one night, and I'm surrounded by boxes, and I would always watch Letterman before I went to bed. So I'm in bed, and I'm in my futon, and all of a sudden, oh, first I have to tell you, in my bathroom, the only way to turn on the light is to stand on the toilet and screw it in, because somebody painted the light fixture shut because they were an asshole. So the only way I could screw in, turn on, and turn off the light bulb was to screw it in manually with my hand. Right. And I would keep a washcloth on top of the light fixture because the light would get hot and I'd have to take it off and unscrew the light bulb to turn it off at night, right? So I, you know, take my makeup off, brush my teeth, get in bed, and all of a sudden I hear this squeak, 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 pop, light turns on. And I was like, oh no, here we go, here we go. So I just take a breath and I run to the bathroom, jump up on the toilet, unscrew the light bulb, jump down onto the toilet, onto the floor, and then, you know what I mean, go back to bed, and it happens again. It's like I just hear the squeak, 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 and then lights on. It was just like, Jesus Christ. So, and just for everyone who's listening, if you're wondering why I didn't just take the light bulb out and throw it in the garbage, I literally thought, if I do that, that light bulb is going to float up out of the garbage, back into the light fixture and screw itself in. I was not ready for that. So I unscrewed the light bulb again, and I stood in the middle of the bathroom, and I put my hands out, and I looked up in the sky because, you know, ghosts float. And I said, I'm really tired. I don't know if I want to move to LA either, but I have to get some sleep tonight. I feel like you're upset that I'm leaving, and I'm sorry. Can you please not turn on the light again? And the light did not turn on again. And I didn't. I was there for about 2 more weeks after that, and I never experienced any paranormal activity after that. a lot of people are like, was it horrifying living with a ghost? Like, I don't know if I could ever live with a ghost. I'm like, you know what? I've done it. It's not bad. It's not bad. What's worse is living with an actual living, breathing person. That is a nightmare.
Okay, wait a minute. When that light bulb was screwing in and all of a sudden the light was coming on in the apartment, because again, it's a studio apartment, so you're on your futon. There's only one room.
Well, it was a big apartment. It was a long apartment. It was like there was the living room, and it was kind of like a railroad apartment. So there's when you walk in, you're looking at the living room sleeping area. Then beyond that, I actually had an eat-in kitchen and a huge closet. I had a full kitchen. Then beyond that is an actual bathroom with a door on it.
I see. So it was like down the hall or at the other end.
Yeah. I mean, okay. It wasn't a huge apartment. It was probably 200 square feet, maybe 300 square feet, maybe. But it was long. It felt like a big space.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice place, except for that ghost thing.
Yeah.
So when you saw that the light went back on, you went back into the bathroom, you unscrewed it, you go back to bed, and it happens again.
Yes,
it actually happened
three times.
Did you start crying? Did you call anybody?
No. My heart was racing.
Did you ever think, I gotta go? You had to have friends there. Did you ever think, I'm going to so-and-so's house, or I'm having somebody come in and stay with me?
No.
How are you so strong? I just feel like I would have been so scared.
If you ever live in Manhattan and you're paying under $500 a month rent in 1997, you're not going anywhere. So, honest to God, it's a survival thing.
Why was it 900 and then it went down to 467?
Well, because I think the other part, no, it wasn't the same apartment. It was a different apartment.
Oh, that's right. When you came in, Chris said the first that apartment was gone. So when you moved out 3 years later, was Chris still the super?
Yeah.
And do you think, there was just a smooth transition? Somebody else moved in, or did you?
Oh, I'm sure somebody else moved. I mean, I didn't keep in touch with it. I mean, my friend Ramon, who lived next door in the apartment adjacent to mine, he lived there for probably another 4 or 5. He lived there until 9/11, and then he moved out. But, nobody cared, because the thing is when you have a rent controlled building, they can only raise the rent so much when a new person moves in. So you could literally say, well, there was a mass murder in the studio apartment, and before that there was a prostitution ring in the building. You'd go, oh really? And the rent's $510? Great. Okay, yeah. Where do I sign?
So Ramon, did he know about these hauntings as well? He knew about the apartment mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
I guess it's also would be a little bit easier thinking that it was a 27-year-old girl that obviously, died too early.
But I don't even know if it was her. To be honest with you, like, I felt like the presence was older.
Interesting.
But I don't know, because I'm not a medium. But I did feel like the presence was older, and I did have these weird dreams where I would see her in the bath. Like, I would see something in the bathroom, or something would be pulling me into the bathroom. But I don't know if that was a dream of my own imagination that made that happen, because so much paranormal activity happened in that area.
And when you first saw the space, when Chris first showed it to you, did you have any intuition at that point?
None.
None when he first showed you?
Yeah. And matter of fact, when I signed the lease and I finally moved in, there was a lot of weird stuff in there. Like, there was a picture, the Pope was on the cover of New York Times Magazine. So there was a picture of the Pope taped to the inside of the closet. On top of the closet, there was about a foot of space between the ceiling and the top of the closet, because somebody had built that closet in into the kitchen. And there were little beer cans and paper bags all over the top of it. There was prescription meds in the medicine cabinet in the bathroom, but I didn't bother to look them up, because I was like, oh, I just always assume when I see prescription meds, it's for, it's for something important. It's not
a legitimate thing, and it's personal.
Yeah, and it's personal, right. So I didn't bother looking that up. The refrigerator had never been cleaned out. It was filled with maggots and rotten food.
Oh my God, that's so gross.
Oh, it was so gross. It took me a month to get that clean and to where I could actually use it, worth bleaching it out. I'm telling you, when I went in there, I had work to be done. And I would go to work the next day and I'd have paint all in my hair and I would look crazy. My friends were like, what's going on with you? And I'm like, I'm just trying to get my apartment livable.
Why do you think that because I usually thought that if somebody dies in the apartment, there's certain types of cleaning that has to be done, like a hazmat kind of a team. But if she didn't die there, But why didn't still the super turn it over? Why was it like a as-is place?
Well, first off, because he probably doesn't make a lot of money for being the super. Second of all, she was from another country. She was from Colombia.
So, her parents, nobody came.
Yeah, they came and took her body and that's it.
Wow.
I also think that, yeah, they had no reason to, like, you know, move her crappy furniture or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they're mourning. They just want to take the body and forget she ever came to the States. He said she had a heart murmur, but I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Did you know that Chris's wife was a religious person, or was she a religious person, or how did she just, like, have this exorcism in her back pocket? I mean,
I did not expect that at all. She was, like, this stunningly beautiful actress who did bus and truck tours of Broadway. Like, she did road tours of Broadway, and she was just, like, so smart and drop-dead gorgeous, and I couldn't believe she turned into a Pentecost. It was very weird.
And she left the baby in the apartment when she came over and did that.
Yep.
It's just crazy that she just had that, you know. Did you ever tell her about the light bulb experiment, you know, the light bulb moment?
No. Because, I mean, here's the thing, like, I mean, I can't speak for everyone who's lived in New York, but, you know, it's a funny story, but nobody would move out for that. And nobody would call the super and go, you're not going to believe this. There's a ghost in my place. And what are you guys going to do about it? They're not going to do shit about it.
Yeah.
You just shut up, you pay your rent, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's like tenants in LA are so different from tenants in New York, because tenants in New York don't complain to the same way that LA people do about their living, you know, their apartments and how everything's got to be perfect, you know.
Because of course the real estate is so much higher in New York, and
it's just as high here.
Really? I thought it was much higher in New York.
It's high in New York, but you can't rent, Christine, if you were to go rent an apartment right now downtown, it would be $3,000 for a one bedroom.
That I do believe. I do believe that. But there's places that are close by that at least, like, you know, you can open a window and you can maybe have a porch, or you can get a couch because you don't have to go up so high. Like, I just feel like LA, it's a little bit cushier than New York.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, we definitely have a little bit of a easier, I'm talking about Manhattan. Brooklyn is lovely. Queens is lovely. I'm talking about, like, living in Manhattan, which not many people do anymore.
Did you know, because I've never lived in New York. I only have visited and been on business. Did you know people living in New York?
Nope.
That owned anything?
Nope.
You didn't know anybody that owned anything in New York?
Nope, not a soul. I didn't know anybody.
But wait a minute. But you had friends.
No.
What do you mean by that?
I had no friends. I had one friend who's like a mother to me. Her name's Dorsey Winant, and she lived in Jersey City. And she helped me find a sublet for 2 months in Jersey City. I didn't know. I had one contact who was a friend of a friend who went to VCU. And he was like, one of my friends went to VCU and was like, I'll help you get a job. And he opened a door for me to apply for a job at MTV. And MTV had an in-house temp department. And a lot of people would, after college, you would, you know, if you wanted to work in the business, you would either become a page or you would
start there. Right.
You would start there, or you would go to one of the networks and be part of their in-house temp program. Because temps in New York City make $30 an hour.
Right.
So, and you can actually live.
Right.
You know, so that's what I did, and he helped me get a job. I did not know a soul in New York City.
When you moved there. But even when you moved out 3 years later, how long
did
you
live? When I moved to LA.
When you moved to LA.
Yeah.
Even during that time, obviously once you were there, you had some friends and you got to know people. Did you ever know anybody that owned anything?
No. Actually, no, one friend, my friend Wendy owned an apartment, but that, you know, but her parents helped her do that.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, in LA, I feel like I have a lot of friends who own things, and, you know, it seems more feasible. But New York, it's just so, the space is so
rich. I have friends now who own things because I'm an adult. Back then, I was a child.
Uh-huh.
There's no 22-year-old that owns an apartment in New York unless they're from New York or they have family. Like, that's just,
okay, that's what I think I'm disconnecting. That makes sense. That makes a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to spend more time there. Would you ever want to go back there?
I did go back.
Yeah, you did go back for a little while. Mm-hmm. You had a
last
job.
Year.
And how long did you stay back?
I was there for 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you miss LA?
Very, very much.
Yeah.
Very, very much.
Well, because you're kind of a fitness person and kind of a health guy. Every time I see you, something's going on fitness-wise. And you seem very healthy. And that is different in LA, don't you think?
A little bit, but not really, because in New York, all the best spin studios like SoulCycle, Flywheel, they started in New York.
Oh, interesting.
Barry's Bootcamp. You know, like, well, Barry's actually started here, but now they have Barry's in New York. And where I was living was in this best neighborhood in Chelsea. So I was literally 4 blocks from Barry's Bootcamp, 2 blocks from Crunch. Like, I had, you know, two blocks from Peloton, 2 blocks from Orange Theory. Like, I had all of my fitness
stuff. What do you think
of
that boot camp?
I love Barry's Bootcamp.
Tell me about how that goes. What happens?
It's kind of like HIIT training, but a little bit better than HIIT training.
What's that mean?
HIIT, high intensity interval training.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know it was an acronym. Okay.
Yeah, it's an acronym. You get your maximum calorie burn by working out really, really hard and then slowing it down, and then working hard and slowing it down. Barry's is a combo. So you do cardio, and it's cardio for, you know, a few minutes. Sometimes you do 3 rounds, sometimes you do 2 rounds. So you're going back and forth from a treadmill to a bench with weights. So
that's the round, is the treadmill to the weights.
Right.
Do you get yelled at?
No.
Okay, so what?
It's not a boot camp like that. It's just,
well,
it's
called. That is in the word. It's in the title, boot camp.
Right, but just because you go to a boot camp, a boot camp doesn't mean someone's yelling at you. Boot camp means you're going to get your ass kicked.
I see.
It's going to be challenging. It's going to be brutal.
Can you keep up?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's good. That's exciting. I took a like a hip hop dance class one time on a roof in Hollywood from this girl, Robin Anton, who was
the, oh my god, yes, she's the original Pussycat Doll.
Right, she was on the show. She invited me to go. I'm like, oh yeah, man, that sounds like fun. I get up there. There's like 300 people. I lasted about, oh, I don't know, 12 minutes, and I feel like I'm in good shape, but it's just like an unheard
dance
of.
Is different. Dance is
hard.
Yeah, because sometimes I take classes at Groove 3, and, you know, I am drenched afterwards.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up. I mean, the coordination.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I was a kid and aerobics were hot, block aerobics or something about step aerobics. People were up on a block, and
yeah.
I could never do that. I'd twist my ankle. I could never keep up. I couldn't be so.
Yeah, I wish they still had those classes because I love them.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very funny. Okay, tell me about Sharan Sharan. I love the title.
Thank you. My friend Teddy came up with the title because I knew I wanted to make myself into a Nagel, and I knew.
Wait, what's that mean?
Patrick Nagel is an artist from the 80s who might have been the late 70s when he started. He would take pictures of Playboy models in his apartment, and then he would take all the color out of the pictures.
Oh, interesting.
So he would take the color out of the skin and make them really, really white. He'd make their hair jet black and make their lips like a bright red or a magenta or like a brick red, deep reds. Lots of jewel tones and primary colors. He's an iconic artist from the 80s. So I knew I wanted to turn myself into a Nagel. And then I was looking at Duran Duran albums. I'm like, I think I want to do this. And my friend Teddy went, Sharan Sharan. And I was like, that's what I'm calling my album. And that's why I hang out with gay men.
That is so funny. Wait, why were you looking at Duran Duran albums? I mean,
because
were you in a shop or?
No, because Patrick Nagel did a lot of their covers.
Oh, okay.
I was looking at album covers going, styles do I want to do? And I knew I wanted to kind of do something from
that's
the 80s.
Great, man.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really effective. I love it.
It's beautiful. My artist is Heather Hanford.
Uh-huh.
She's amazing. And when I was reaching out to a bunch of artists, and she emailed me back and was like, I would love to do this. Patrick Nagel, huge influence on my artistic career. And I was like, done. You're the one.
Wow.
And she crushed it with the cover. I can't wait to see the rest of the art for the album.
That is so beautiful that it comes together like that, when you can pull from somebody else's artistry and what she does well.
Yeah.
And so she is a what's her medium?
She's a graphic artist.
Design, right, mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. And so is there a concept behind the album? It's how many tracks?
It's 22 tracks. Mm-hmm. I mean, the title really has nothing to do with it. There's no concept. It's just material.
What's your name, though? I mean, Sharan Sharan. You don't think Sharon Houston when you see Sharan Sharan.
Right, exactly.
So it's you.
Yes, it's me. It's just 22 tracks. When you buy the album, if you pre-order, you can pre-order. Well, it's already... This will air after that, but when you pre-order, you get a bonus track.
Oh, yay.
So, which is a joke that I do about, you know, wishing that there was an antiques roadshow for boyfriends where you can bring, you know, have the guy appraised so you don't waste your time getting to know him, you know?
Interesting. Wait, let me hear more about that concept.
Well, I watch Antiques Roadshow, and, you know, people bring their things and go, oh, it's worth $50,000 or it's worth $2. Let's do that with people. Because I don't want to get to know people anymore. Like, I can't.
Oh, I see. You're okay.
When you're dating someone, I don't want to get to know them. I'm exhausted.
Right. In other words,
tell
why
me your
would
piece.
You, yeah. So, do you do any online dating?
No.
So when you meet some, because the thing with online dating is you can kind of vet people, and if they give you their website or something really clean, you could just look at it and know within a minute.
You know what? I online dated for about 3 months, 2 years ago, because my friend Alex Alexander was like, have you ever had her on the show?
No.
She's an amazing storyteller. Okay. She was like, oh, you've got an internet date. And I was like, well, I'll try it. And I had some guy who was unemployed going, he asked me some weird question. I was like, why are you asking me this? Because I'm considering asking you out on a date. And I was like, go fuck yourself. You don't have a job. I'm considering telling you to go fuck yourself. Like, who does that? I'm like, I'm not going to be talked to like that by a guy who's like, I don't know what to do with my life and I don't have a job and I'm confused. No, thank you. Yeah. So I quit.
So what's the best way then to meet a guy now? And especially if you don't want to give them your time to get to know them. In other words, like how do you shake it out?
I meet people in real life. It's not the that I don't want to give way. Them, exactly. It's not that I don't want to not give them my time. It's just, it's a joke. It's like, it's never until like month 3 or 4 that you realize the guy's a piece of shit or an alcoholic. I want to know within a week so that I don't waste my time
maybe
on you.
Then the best way is through friends and family, maybe.
Nope.
No.
Everybody's terrible. Everybody's terrible.
You're pretty so much. Funny.
How do you
You're
meet so people? Funny.
Yeah, no, I did the dating thing online, but only, a very short time. And then I met a guy that I dated for like a year, but then it didn't work out. So, it's a conundrum. And also, I think people are very comfortable living alone now. I think people get into a lot of people don't feel like you have to be in a couple or you have to be married. So people are just like, well, you know, this is kind of what I'm doing right now. I have my daughter and I'm, you know, I got to make money. That's an important part of things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I had a girl on a couple weeks ago, Molly McAleer, talking about Tinder.
I love her.
Yeah, she's really funny and pretty outrageous. And she, you know, was talking about Tinder, and that seems kind of has some thought behind it. In other words, if you're in your neighborhood and you can meet somebody just for one thing, you know, at this time.
I follow her on Snapchat, and she's always going on Tinder dates.
Yeah, she is.
She's always going on Tinder dates. And it's so funny because they never work out.
Yeah, so they don't. So I'm not sure that maybe that isn't the way either.
I mean, it's just not, I don't know. I don't want to, I hear what you're saying about people wanting to live alone. The only reason to marry someone, honest to God, the only reason to marry them is if it benefits you guys financially or if you're going to have kids. I'm not going to have kids. I don't want to have kids. I've never wanted to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the only way I would marry somebody is if it would benefit us financially as a couple. Otherwise, why? It's a business. It costs so much money to get a divorce. It's a business. Mm-hmm. Divorce is a business. So, you know, I would rather just pack up my shit and leave if it's not working out, or tell him to leave and not have to worry about calling a lawyer and figuring it out.
Yeah. Have you ever been, do you think, like truly in love?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's the idea is that you want to be with that person all the time.
Well, I do want to be with someone, and I do want to have like a partner, like a male partner that I have sex with. But a marriage is a contract,
right,
that you end up paying someone else a lot of money to get out of.
So, but you'll live with somebody.
Of course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, totally. I'll be a part of something, but like, don't make me marry you unless it's important. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to make you marry. I'm not going to be that girl that's like, if you don't marry me.
Well, that's a very young mindset. That's young girls in their 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, totally. But yeah. I'm not doing it. But there are some older women that are like on their second round and, you know, they've already divorced once and they want to get married again and they're looking. And I'm like, why do you want to put yourself through that a second and third time?
Because it's kind of like a lot of times, especially growing up in the Midwest, that's kind of like ingrained in you, and that's all you know.
Yeah.
This is how you live through life. And if you aren't married or you don't have kids, then somehow you failed.
Like, oh, yeah. What see, I'm from Miami, so I don't have any of that.
Yeah, so I'm just, that's, but I think that's part of the mindset.
Yeah.
You know, that this, yeah, because they don't really see that you actually don't need anybody else. You can actually fulfill yourself. It's a whole thing.
But we do need people because we need each other because we're human. We just don't need to be in a contract. We don't need to sign paperwork.
Right,
because
I
guess
agree.
What? If someone's going to leave the relationship, they're going to fucking leave. It doesn't matter. If they're going to cheat on you, they're going to cheat on you.
Yeah.
You have to trust each other. And that's the only binding agreement anybody should have.
Yeah.
And hospitals should let, this is the person I live with. We've been together for 20 years. Let me see them if they're on their deathbed. I don't need to have paperwork saying we're married. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that is a crazy situation right there. Yeah, that's really crazy.
All that stuff makes me mad.
Where do you live right now? West Hollywood?
I don't think I should tell people where I live.
Okay.
But
in LA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like where you live?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. There's so many choices here in Los Angeles. Sometimes, you know, I've lived in Los Feliz for so long, but I think if I moved to the beach, it'd be like living in a whole nother.
Oh, like a whole. Yeah. I'd never see you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see
my friends who moved to the beach. Like, I rarely see my friends Jason and Madeline because they live in Venice. They used to live in Los Feliz. We would go to dinner at least twice a month.
Yeah.
Now I see them every 6 months, maybe.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So it's good and bad. But I'm glad you're in Los Angeles and not New York.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I mean, I love New York, but I'm happy to be back.
I'm glad. I'm really glad. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Let Sharon know that you like her story and tweet her over at Sharon_Houston on Twitter. And also go to our website, IamSharonHouston.com, and there you can get Sharan Sharan. And join us next week on Storyworthy for former NBA basketball player turned author Paul Shirley talking about love and basketball in Spain.
And now I've run the length of the court, and what I need to do is stop all of my momentum, catch the ball, which is going to land somewhere around my hip, and kind of like torque it up past my shoulder and into the basket, while also not falling out of bounds. It's going to be a miracle shot, but I catch the ball, and I manage to make the turn, and the buzzer hasn't sounded yet, and I'm thinking, I might do this. Like, I'm going to beat Marcus Fizer on his home territory, save the team, save my career, maybe do something with the girl, get $13,000, and...
Join us next week for the talented Paul Shirley. I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And again, on behalf of the talented Sharon Houston, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I had so much fun, Christine. Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.